Welcome to Servcast. I'm Dr. William Lamb and glad you joined us today. My guest is Pastor Travis Johnson from Mobile, Alabama. We'll dig right into this conversation in just a minute. Hey, and we're back, and here's the cool thing, right? A lot of times we have conversations with people because we like maybe their voice into a particular agenda or an idea. But today we're going to have a conversation with this guy named Travis. Welcome, Travis.
Hey, welcome, Dr. Lamb. It's good to be here.
Glad you're here. Simply because I like the guy, and he has a lot of different things going on. So we're going to kind of dig into this today and talk about Travis's ministry, his wife Kelly, and what they're doing. They're Lee alums. We're delighted to say that. But all right, Travis, so welcome to Servcast. We're glad you're here, man. So what's going on in Mobile, Alabama, where you're currently pastoring, right?
Well, I'm not there right now because I'm with you. So
that's true.
Anything could change at any time. Yeah. Actually, I went away one time for a couple days. I came back and one of the church vans had burned to the ground.
Oh, wow.
So anything could happen.
There you go.
We actually are here in Cleveland. Our daughter, Courtney, just finished up soccer camp at Lee. Of course, we love Lee.
You guys can wave at Courtney. She can't see you.
She's hanging out in the corner making faces.
But she's here with us. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
cool.
And see, Kelly's the first generation of her family go to Lee. I'm like fourth generation, so we're working on indoctrinating Courtney to be fifth.
Yeah.
But Pathway is just a really wonderful place, just right there on coastal Alabama. So good Gulf seafood, some wonderful people.
You're inviting me down now, right, for like an R&R on the coast, correct?
I'm going to say yes to the invitation I just gave you. That's a deal.
That'd be awesome.
That's a deal.
Awesome.
Actually, I'm trying to get you to come hang out with me in Cambodia sometime.
Yeah, someday I will. Yeah. We'll put some dates together on that. But all right, let's jump back. So, you know, Mobile is not your first assignment in ministry. I think you mentioned earlier in a conversation that as soon as Kelly graduated from Lee, you guys moved to Chicago. So bring us up on a little bit about your ministry. And the reason I want to do this is because, all right, guys, you guys that are listening to us, Travis is actually the president or executive director of PCL, and then his wife Kelly is the director of
Biotree Change of Life.
Yeah, Biotree Change of Life. So let's dig in. Let's go back and talk a little bit about this Ellis Hall guy who, you know, was here, and then now you're changing the world literally. So bring us up to speed.
Well, so 92 is actually pretty cool for me. I come to Lee, step into old Ellis Hall, and I'm at Lee for like 2 days, and Hurricane Andrew actually hit where I grew up, and everything just went away. I don't think I talked to my dad for about 2 months.
Wow.
Just all power was gone, et cetera. And I think one of the things that just drove Lee home for me is when somebody heard about what happened there with our house, man, we did not talk about this at all. You and I didn't. So I go in to make a payment, I guess, in the business and finance office. Somebody had heard that Hurricane Andrew hit, and they paid whatever my debt was for the rest of that semester.
Nice.
So I thought, that's pretty cool. So, you know, right off the bat, Lee was an incredible experience.
Yeah.
Involved in Greek life and some different things around campus, trying to figure out what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. Actually, I probably changed my major 3 or 4 times just trying to figure out what I needed to do. And I remember having a conversation with the Lord in the phone booth back when we had those, right by the corner of the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And I told the Lord, I said, I don't know what you want me to do. I'm talking to you and you're not saying anything back. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to finish my degree, which at that point was a communications degree. And then I'll go and make as much money as I can. And I'll be a really great part of a church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll serve. I just thought that's what Christians did.
Sure.
But if not, if you'll tell me what I need to do, then I'll go finish, you know, I'll go start a church. And but you have to make it really obvious. So actually, I was cramming for finals between my junior and senior year over at O'Charley's. And Pastor Maloney came up to me. I hadn't shaved in about 5 days. My hat's on backwards. I hadn't slept for a few days just trying to finish up school. And he came and said, Travis, I'd like for you to come on staff at North Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, that's pretty obvious. So shot over, did that. Kind of the rest is history as far as ministry is concerned.
Sure.
Felt really peace. Knew exactly what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
Now, you spent some time in Miami, I think. Is that correct?
I did. I grew up in Miami.
Okay.
When Kelly graduated, the next day after graduation, we packed up, moved to Chicago. We started a church there. Mm-hmm. We were there for a couple years. At that same time, electronic bill presentment and payment was coming out, where people did online bills. And you couldn't really hire, like, normal people because it was just right at the beginning of that technology.
Right.
And so really it was like a bunch of young guys that kind of got picked up, and we went out and started selling. I picked up my first client, met with the senior vice president of Harley-Davidson, picked up Harley-Davidson, Novartis, Chicago Tribune, Nike, some stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that probably really shaped ministry as much as anything, just learning how to engage with leaders and learn about marketing, you know, learn more practical stuff about marketing rather than just school. And so we were there for 2 years, got a job with a competitor in Miami, moved back to Miami. A year later, restarted the church I grew up in. Yeah. And we were there for about 14 years. That was an incredible window of time for us.
Let's go back to this phone booth conversation. You know, here's the reason, because there's a lot of Christian jargon, right? Yeah, so, you know, people, Christians talk this all kind of language, and they got this jargon, right? And we have these conversations, and we have these buzzwords and things like that. You know, for people who might not know what you're talking about, when you say you had a conversation with God, what does that look like?
Well, right? I'm talking to him, and I wasn't hearing anything back. Right. So, you know, whenever I've never really heard God just like the clouds open up, but, you know, speaks to me through the scriptures, speaks to me through friendships. I joke around that my wife is like Mother Teresa. Actually, we took a personality test on vacation this summer. You know, all of my celebrity personality counterparts, I'm an ENTJ.
Yeah.
My celebrity counterparts are like Norman Schwarzkopf, Douglas MacArthur, you know, these kind, and then Kelly's. Yeah. Mother Teresa, you know.
Somehow the military and Mother Teresa go together, I guess. I don't know. That's interesting.
I guess she can put up with me, so.
That's cool.
But, yeah, you know, you're just looking for direction, and I just wasn't finding it. Right. I wasn't finding it. I personally believe that you go, you do the next right thing. You do the next right thing. Mm-hmm. And so you can't do wrong when you do good. The Bible says anyone that knows to do good and doesn't sin.
Right.
So, you know, to me, that's the next thing. But I got really clear direction, especially since, you know, I remember serving, volunteering at North Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I was running cameras, camera number two. I'd stay up really late Saturday nights playing Duke Nukem video games, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember actually looking at the pastor, and I had the crosshairs in the camera, and I thought, man, I could take pastor out with a rocket launcher from here. And, you know, but I just thought you served. You know, I was on a camera, or we went and did nursing home.
Sure.
There's a old gentleman, his name was Roy Crane. I called him, you know, old brother Crane, you know. And he would take me down in his old station wagon on Sunday after church down to Chattanooga. We go to a nursing home, roll old people in, lock them down, sing to them, preach to them, and just love on them a little bit. So I just thought that's what Christians did.
Right.
So to take those next steps, I was just looking for some direction. That's kind of what that was.
How did you land in Mobile? And how long ago did you land in Mobile?
We've been there for 3 years.
Okay.
And, you know, leaving Miami was a big step. Yeah. 14 years there, we restarted. We had 27 people when we started. We were in a movie theater for 7 years. We were a little bit nomadic, bought and sold some properties. When we finished up, we had the largest Protestant church property in Miami. Mm. Church had just exploded, and 6 months before, we had paid all the property off.
Wow.
So it felt really easy. Everything was easy. It was still very invigorating, but you know, a lot of things you work for.
Sure.
The Lord had really helped us there. But after my first of all, one of my college roommates who was in Old Ellis Hall at Lee, his grandfather was pastor of Pathway Church in Mobile.
Okay.
He was there for about 27 years, kind of like an old lion, just this strong, can do anything type of guy. So I just loved being around him. He tried to hire me as his youth pastor when I was about 22, just when I was leaving Lee. And I was pretty locked in at North Cleveland, but had always had an affinity for Pathway. It's like Life Point in South Florida was like, we know people, we can get stuff done. Pathway is like, we can do things and we can get stuff done. Both very entrepreneurial types of churches, strong leadership in the church, people that are, you know, attempting great things. And I, you know, it was just a really wonderful place. Mm-hmm. And so I got a call from some folks in the church asking if, you know, there was a pastoral transition asking if we would consider coming to Pathway. And it just was it felt like the right thing for us to do.
Cool.
And it has been incredible. It's been really great.
Let's talk about PCL.
Yeah.
You know, what's PCL mean? This is a quick acronym, right?
People PCL for care is and learning. People for Care and Learning.
So how did you get involved in that? Didn't you ride a bike across some?
Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff. Yeah. PCL breaks a cycle of poverty by inspiring hope and empowering potential. So I fell in love with that. I fell in love with helping people. What PCL was doing was really transformational work. So Dr. Fred Garman had caught me at some point when we were just back in the movie theater at Life Point. You know, we were bringing our soundboard in on a TV tray, setting up, people pulling in lights and trucks, and you know, we didn't have two nickels to rub together. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Fred said, Travis, you got to come to Cambodia. I said, oh, Dr. Fred, I would love to come. I can't afford to come. He said, man, you just come once. I'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. And just come and see for yourself. And it was like after that, I was hooked. Mm-hmm. Because what was happening in this 98-99% Buddhist country
right.
is that people were hungry. They needed education. There were orphans everywhere. And the gospel was meeting real felt needs. People were open to the gospel. It was just incredible to watch. And what PCL does mm-hmm. is done really well. Mm-hmm. So I went over once. I was thinking about how I wanted to give my life. It's kind of how I try to do everything. Rather than going an inch deep and a mile wide, I'd like to take something mm-hmm. really deep and go mm-hmm. for the distance. And so we went over, and I just kept going back. So every year we were looking for a project that we could raise awareness and raise money. So right. like you said, one year I rode my bicycle across Vietnam, mm-hmm. Cambodia, and Thailand to raise money for the Build a City project. And we were able to raise enough money for 42 homes, to build 42 homes on that bike ride. But I kind of felt like if I did that a second year,
yeah,
it's kind of like playing.
Yeah.
You know, so
I get it.
Looking for something that was scalable, mm-hmm. Repeatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I run marathons, you know, and I do, a couple of years I did that same thing, you mm-hmm. know, to kind of raise money for a couple of things, you know, and we did pretty well in it. So let's talk about this Buy a Tree, Change a Life, right? So mm-hmm. so exactly what is Buy a Tree, Change a Life? And tell us how somebody, you know, here's the deal. We have listeners, I don't know, Tyler, recently 38 countries, something like that, 49 states, I guess. Mm-hmm. We have listeners all over the place, you know, and so it's kind of cool. But for those who might be, you know, particularly in our region of the country, you know, what's Buy a Tree, Change a Life, and how can they get involved?
Well, Buy a Tree, Change a Life is just like the bike ride.
Okay.
We were trying to do something that it's like the Lord had put in our hand to, you know, raise money to help kids. Mm-hmm. And so we had a Coast Guard family in our small group at church that had adopted a little girl from Ethiopia, and they were trying to adopt her older sister to keep the girls together. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, folks in our small group were saying, well, let's do a car wash. You know, that's a lot of car washes. So one of the guys came up with an idea. He was in agriculture sales. He said, I sold Christmas trees on Miami Beach one time. Wow. And we could probably do that. I'm thinking Miami Beach is largely Jewish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you can sell Christmas trees there, we can sell them South Miami, which is largely Catholic.
Right.
And we did. We raised $25,000. Wow. We were able to pay for that adoption at that time and had such a great time. The church grew. People in the church were able. People that weren't able to do like a missions trip or something like that could come there on the church property.
Right.
Like there was a little Puerto Rican grandmother that had recently, you know, given her life to Christ, maybe 3 years prior. And she said, you know, Pastor, I can never go to Cambodia, mm-hmm. but I could I can come work in the tent. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, after that first year, we said, that was a lot of fun. Let's do it again. We rolled it out to a few friends that I knew would say yes, just because we were friends that we can learn on. And we had a great time, continue to roll that out. Now we're in 15 states. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to give away millions of dollars through Buy a Tree, Change a Life to help children globally and locally.
Wow. 15 states.
Yeah.
Wow. So that requires a tremendous amount of networking. You said something a few minutes ago. You talked mm-hmm. about this, you know, when you first got started in the ministry and how that, you know, sales is, you know, similar to ministry. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. we're not selling Jesus. We're giving him away, you know, of course. But let's talk a little bit about networking, because mm-hmm. you have a lot of experience in that. You know, what can somebody who's listening to us who has this grand idea, you know, let's say they're not going to ride a bike across Cambodia, you know, they're not going to like start a Buy a Tree, Change a Life Foundation, but inside of them is this burning desire to test something, mm-hmm. to risk it, right? So what would you say to somebody like that the idea of networking and how can they connect to other people? What values matter? What's important? What do we need to know?
I think whether you're in business or you're in some kind of social enterprise, a cause, you know, a lot of times we think, too small to make a difference. You know, what does this really matter?
Right.
Especially when, if you've ever been exposed to like big world problems, you think, I'm too small. Mm-hmm. I think it was Churchill, I'm not totally sure, but said that that anyone that thinks they're too small to make a difference has never spent the night with a mosquito.
Oh, wow.
And I've thought about that actually, you know, one like a mosquito can make an impact, but really when a lot of small people swarm together, you can make monster impact and create something that can outlast one charismatic leader.
Right.
And so I think that's the power of really a network or a team, a family. I like to call Buy a Tree, Change a Life a family. Mm-hmm. It's a network of leaders, people that are activists in their community for, in our case, helping children. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to bring those people together. Usually it's once you get one leader, then that leader has leaders and mm-hmm. followers.
Sure.
And so really it's about rallying around a cause that you passionately believe in. If you if you're passionate about something, passion is like the trump card that overcomes education, sure. even competency. Your competency will raise mm-hmm. if you're really passionate about something. Mm-hmm. Passion will cause you to press through difficulties mm-hmm. and inadequacies. Lack of resourcing. In fact, sometimes heavily resourced things skip the whole process of sure. networking and building relationships, sure. which is the real power. Mm-hmm. So through that, we've been able to build with Buy a Tree, Change a Life about 4,000 volunteers that come together
wow.
around Thanksgiving, some 70, 80,000 people that rally together in this project. Mm-hmm. It's been incredible. I just came from a church in Augusta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went over and spoke, we give awards to our high-performing
right.
sites and that sort of thing. So each year we give to the champion a big WWF
nice.
Belt. It says undisputed champion or something like that. And so the church there in Augusta, they've kind of been this top-performing place. But Mobile took the belt for the first
Did they?
Time.
Wow.
So because I love Wesley Weatherford and Oasis Church so much, I want to be really gracious. And
That's
I made sure
funny.
To walk to the pulpit with the
Yeah.
with the WWF yeah. belt on. Let them know what's up.
That's good. Hey, guys, we're going to take a pause for just a second. We'll be right back, and we're going to ask Travis some difficult questions like what hasn't worked, what failures have you overcome, and how do you actually get back up when you fall down? Hey, and we're back, and we talked about before the short break that we're going to ask you the tough questions, Travis. You know, so now you've kind of, you know, laid out for us kind of a very encouraging, you know, you've had some great successes, right? So I'm sure you've had some challenges along the way. So yeah. for people who are trying to dream, who seem to be hitting, you know, dead ends, or people who are struggling, right, that they don't have the opportunities that you've had or the opportunities that I've had, how do you keep people plugged into the game? And not to say that mm-hmm. Christianity is a game, ministry is a game, because it's not, but just in our, you know, our imagery here for a minute, how do you keep people on course when the challenges seem to often, you know, sideline them?
Well, first of all, none of us start in the same place. We don't. And it's a huge mistake for us to compare ourselves with other people because the starting point is different. So, you know, what I try to encourage people always, and I encourage myself, is start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. And the more often you start, the more often you stay in the game, then the greater your bandwidth becomes, the stronger your shoulders are. The things that rocked you at the beginning, you look back and say, why was that even an issue?
Hmm.
It's not that the problem got smaller, you just got bigger.
Wow.
Two of the big challenges that we really faced, the first is, Kelly and I moved to Chicago the day after we graduated, grabbed an apartment. After
yeah.
we had grabbed an apartment right on the blue line in Chicago, we had $536 left in our pocket.
Wow.
And we had about 14 people from Lee University move up with us to start the church.
Oh, really?
Some amazing folks. JB and Dana Hurt. JB was he went to Chicago, became the running backs coach for University
okay.
of Chicago football. And there were some folks that were going into finance and teachers, and we all just kind of came together to build this church, started small groups in our homes,
mm-hmm.
and it was awesome. I had read the only like church planting anything I'd read was like Purpose-Driven Church
yeah.
by Rick Warren, and I thought, you know, you start a church after reading that, and we're going to have 500 people on the first day. We did have a great start, like
right.
a couple hundred people, but we're inner city. We were in Humboldt Park,
okay.
which is just west of the Loop. Typical family where we're reaching had a single parent household, mm-hmm. eighth grade education,
wow.
Gangs and drugs, and it was a wonderful time for us, really wonderful time. We're making a big difference, reaching a lot of kids. You don't get a lot of money in the offerings
sure.
when you do that. So we're out hustling. I was working, like I mentioned earlier, I
right.
was working as a marketing director outside and just having a blast. But we had some conflict in our leadership team. We had, you know, whenever money gets short, a lot of stuff doesn't work. And I think that's like one of the main causes for divorces as well. So we ended up after 2 years folding our church into becoming this English service at a Spanish church.
Okay.
And so we left Chicago kind of like we dismounted a horse that we killed. And so there's a little, it took a little time to, you know, process through that, but still, you know, encouraged. Kelly and I went to South Florida and picked up kind of in an environment that was similar to Chicago, urban environment, and started over. Had a lot of great wins there. And I want to say it was like maybe 2007, 2006. We were also hustling some stuff on the side, flipping houses and doing that sort of thing. And then we found out we had Chinese drywall in our house. We moved out of our house. All of us had, kids were developing allergies, asthma, nosebleeds, headaches, that sort of thing. As soon as we found out we moved out, all the value in that house immediately went away as soon as we found out. Actually, we were in the first lawsuit in the U.S. I guess there were about 40,000 homes like that between South Florida, New Orleans area, kind of in the housing boom. Prices went up. People could import drywall from China. But it had actually had carbonyl sulfide in it, so it was emitting sulfuric acid from the walls. So it was kind of like one of those moments where we're like, God, we're trying to do something for you. Yeah. And then this stuff is falling apart. So I felt like a really complicated pastor for my church, trying to maintain an optimistic outlook, faith-filled outlook, but kind of feeling, you know, down under it a little bit. So in both of those cases, I feel like we're pressed pretty good to the wall, some more than others. I think when it's one thing for your ministry or your job to be impacted, but then it was our family as well. So we're going, man, what's going on? And really, we had some wonderful people around us. Some guys like Jerry Lawson, Tom Sturbins, that were just like keeping us encouraged. I call them up on the phone, vent out to them. They'd be real patient with us, with me, and then I just try and stay at it. So really, it was just not quitting and continuing to go, having people that could encourage us through that. And also knowing that you're not always winning. You're not always putting points on the board.
Right.
And a lot of times the best victory you have is just surviving to fight the next day. So I think for me, that was the biggest piece, is just not to quit, continue to press in. It turns out to be a great story now. I wouldn't want to go through that again.
Sure.
But I'll tell you one thing it definitely did is it raised my empathy, my compassion level for other people. You know, when things are working for you all the time, you look at somebody and their stuff isn't working, you're going, what's wrong with you? You know, why are you doing that? But when you've been on the receiving end, then it's really easy for your heart to kind of melt in with people. So, you know, I'm thankful for what came out of that. I wouldn't want to go through it again, but I'm really thankful for that.
Let's dig into relationships for just a minute. So how long have you and Kelly been married?
August 21st will be 20 years for
us. Nice. Well, my wife and I just hit 31, so
it's
pretty exciting. So, you know, at a moment like that, whenever, like you mentioned earlier, you know, so whenever things are happening, like with your church or whatever, but then they start happening at home. So how did you and Kelly dig in together? You know, because a lot of times, you know, one spouse may be digging in, the other one not, or maybe, you know, one may be trying to dig in and the other one so busy somewhere else. You know, how did you come together and say, you know, we're gonna build stability for our children, for our family, you know, we're gonna endure this through the journey?
Well, for one, I feel like when you have an injury in your body, then it's like your blood pools around or moves towards your most vital organs. I feel like that happened for us in Chicago.
Okay.
That we actually got close through that. We just hung on to each other and took care of each other. My compensation was coming from outside the church, so that helped. But we just kind of leaned into each other. And I feel like with that as our backdrop, it made what happened in South Florida with the Chinese drywall an easier and easier thing to do. But, you know, we were flipping houses too on top of all that stuff. So we were leveraged in a lot of properties. And when the housing market kind of dropped down, man, we were doing everything. Actually, we had just bought two new cars, paid cash for them, and it wasn't just a few months later, I'm just selling my cars for what I can get so I can go put money into a house, give somebody money to buy my house, you know, our properties from us. So that was, actually, I called Kelly one day and I said, hey, I found this really great minivan. I'm bringing it home. I didn't even let it, we didn't test drive it or anything. Paid $1,000 for a minivan. So we went from like multiple houses to, in a, you know, a debt-free brand new car, you know, brand new cars to going, hey, there's no duct tape on this van. Nice. This is perfect. I can put my kayaks on it.
Nice. So what did you learn through all of that? You know what? So you're learning some values here that you obviously have implemented now with, you know, the other entrepreneurial efforts that you're involved in your local church. You know, what are the quick lessons that you learned back then that, you know, you can recommend to other people today when they're in the thick of it, say, look for these things.
One thing I'd say is compartmentalize your stress.
Okay.
Compartmentalize your trauma. It's really, I see this happening where you have some kind of trauma at home and then it bleeds over into work. And so rather than just having a relational difficulty you're dealing with at home, now your finances are busted up because you can't hold down a job. Your boss and folks, you know, think you're chaos or whatever. So learning to kind of keep that kind of partitioned off, I think was a big thing. And then the other piece would probably be to stick tight with the people that have been sticking tight with you.
Mm-hmm.
Just rally the troops in. That's the time that you want to muster, as opposed to letting your stresses come out on the people that are the closest to you.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to this conversation with God. We only have a few minutes left in our episode, but let's go back to this conversation with God. You know, you're telling me now, William, so dig in with the people who are digging in with you, you know, make space for other people to be able to help them, you know, hang tight with your spouse, you know, get through this journey. But let's go back to this conversation with God. You know, how did you learn to listen? You said a while ago, you know, that you were talking in a phone booth, you know, and God wasn't saying anything. Well, obviously God's had to say something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he spoke through the scriptures to you. But, you know, what disciplines did you employ in your life? And then how can other people begin to do this same thing in their own life to where they can hear God speak to them, albeit through scripture, maybe be it through a confident friend? I don't know. But what are the disciplines you need to put in place to be able to say, okay, God, I think you want me to do this. You want me to risk this idea of riding across Cambodia. You want me to risk this idea of, you know, starting this, you know, buy a tree foundation. How do you get to the place where you say, I'm going to risk it because I think God is speaking it to me? Does it make sense?
Well, I think you can never go wrong by doing what's right. In the absence of direction, do what you're good at and do what's right.
Okay.
And the Lord gifts us in particular ways for a reason. So, you know, God's not going to call me to be a doctor, or he, you know, there are things he's not going to call me to because I'm not gifted in those ways.
Right.
So our gifting, the relationships that we have and the opportunities that are available. And then this other piece, man, like initiative. I think initiative is so powerful. A smaller person can take down a bigger guy in a fight if he takes the initiative. If he takes the fight to the other person.
Right.
So in the absence of direction, I don't think you should sit. I think waiting to hear from God is like an active thing you do. Just just always be doing the thing that you know to do.
Mm-hmm.
What you, God's not going to look and say, well, you made the wrong move.
Hmm.
But in those moments where, you know, you're pressing and pressing and pressing, and then a door opens or a window opens, you go, man, that is 100% God.
Mm-hmm.
Like the property we got in Miami for LifePoint on the front page of the South Florida Business Review, in the largest headlines I could imagine, you could imagine, it said, it's a miracle. And then it told this story of this White Knight Chapter 11 bankruptcy resolution that led to us acquiring this piece of property. There's no way that could happen without God, but if we hadn't been working and hustling, that door, I don't know that we would have seen that door. And God, an absence of God's voice isn't like an absence of God.
Wow.
Watching my kids learn to walk, I was there. We held their hands. And then there are times where they're walking, but they're not steady, and we're still close, but I'm not running around with my hands under their butt just in case they fall.
Right.
I'm going to cushion the fall for them.
Right.
It may be sometimes that the absence of what we consider to be God's voice is actually God trusting us to rise in the level of competency that he's developing us in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, go after what God's gifted you to do. And then when he does speak through somebody in your prayer time and in the scriptures, through opportunity being presented to you, then you're ready to go because you've been exercising what you know is right. God's not going to give us big opportunity if we're not exercising discipline over the small opportunities that come our way every day.
So in the words of an old guy like me, so God doesn't bless laziness, right?
No, he doesn't. I think he detests that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does, actually. That's one of the abominations. That's one of the things that he detests.
Yeah.
He takes resources from lazy people and gives more resources to people that will hustle and do the best with what they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably not a popular message right now. I really don't care. The people that want to do things, they're going to do the best they can with what they have.
Sure. So young ministers, right? Young ministers who might be in college anywhere they are, right? Who thinking, man, you know, I wish I could get an idea, you know, an opportunity like Pastor Travis, you know, to be able to, go do something huge, go do something big, right? So you're saying it basically started small, and it started with your willingness to say, I'm going to stay in the game, I'm going to do what I need to do.
And I would say it's, you know, not just ministers as in like vocational clergy.
Sure.
In fact, right now, I mean, so many business leaders and social entrepreneurs are doing incredible things.
Right.
And in ways they're gifted that typical professional clergy is not equipped for as well.
Right.
So I think there's, you know, when you think of ministers, I would think every Christian ought to think of themselves as a minister. Everyone. So yeah, you definitely start with an idea and then you have to put it to work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to test it.
Mm-hmm.
Not every idea works. Some work, but not good enough.
Right.
And so finding that scalable thing. Buy a Tree, Change a Life was an accident. It was a little missions project in a small group that got out of control. And that's how...
I love it.
So we have about 120 ministry projects that happen every year at Pathway through our small groups.
Okay.
Each small group is responsible for a ministry project. I don't need to know about it. It's up to the small group leader that small group. And they just ask, they don't give money to people, but they use their gifts to help someone in the community. We have all kinds of stuff. At Pathway Church, we are for God and our city. That's mm-hmm. We want to love Jesus just a little bit more than people,
mm-hmm.
but we want to love people a whole lot. And so we're always YMCA, how can we work, Boys and Girls Club, mentoring, fixing breakfast for all the teachers at public schools,
mm-hmm.
Private schools, care packages for our police officers, dinner for the firefighters, all kinds of stuff happens. I have people say, how do you guys do so much? Well, I'm finding out about it on Facebook as a small group is posting that up. But every now and then, one of those ideas kind of rises up mm-hmm. to the top, and boom, there's a ministry
mm-hmm.
that's happening. That's what happened with Buy a Tree. We had to come back in and backfill that. Let me say this. When we were talking about networking also, mm-hmm. one thing I failed to mention, in our network, in our Buy a Tree network, we celebrate people nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Our pastors, we celebrate them. Our business leaders who sponsor what we do, we celebrate. We want people to know who's doing this stuff. Who is it that's giving away these resources? Or if a single mom with a little girl comes in, the little girl saved up her money to buy a little Christmas tree because she knows 100% of that Christmas tree is going to go to help kids.
Mm-hmm.
We celebrate that.
Wow.
Taking a selfie with them, putting it on Facebook, thanking them. And this is the reason, because whatever you celebrate, you duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
So this network of people who are celebrating, you're not throwing the pastor's picture up on stuff. They're celebrating all these people in their community, causes that whole community to rise and really rally around what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So Travis, in just a couple of minutes here as we get ready to close this episode, while we're recording this episode, actually, we have 6 or 8 students, I think, at least students who are currently spending the summer in Cambodia. One of those is Christian Schwer, who is actually my co-host on the podcast and actually a lead intern here in the office.
Hey, Christian, if you're listening, what's up?
She probably will be because we're getting some hits from Cambodia, and so it's kind of cool. But so let's talk about college students who want to get involved in this opportunity in the future. You know, how do college students, or how can anyone who wants to get involved in the PCL program, you know, they want to get involved with, Buy a Tree, Change a Life. They want to, you know, they're close to Mobile. They want to come to Pathway. You know, how do people reach out to you? How do they get connected to be involved in the different ministries that you're doing?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, TravisJohnson73, Instagram, TravisJohnson73, or on Facebook, just Travis Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Go to TravisJohnson.net. All my contact is there.
Okay.
Pathwaychurch.us, PCL.is, just throw a bunch of those at you, and buyatreechangealife.com. We'd love to have any Lee students, anyone that has a desire to make an impact in the world, has a personal character and integrity and passion to do something. I love Cambodia. I mean, I believe in it. God has really given us some deep roots there. When we go over, we meet with the leader of parliament. If I'm going over and we don't, it's like, he's my friend, you know, and we've got contacts throughout Cambodia that are, it's easy for us to plug folks in there and do some really great stuff, give some people some great experiences. So we would love that. Also, Buy a Tree, Change a Life recently started a partnership with Serving Orphans Worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not only looking at Southeast Asia, Myanmar, Vietnam, that sort of thing, but we're all over. Casa Shalom in Guatemala, all five continents. There's about 50-plus children's homes where people can get involved. And so I would love to connect with anybody like that. That would be super. But there's everything there. You don't have to go to Cambodia to help either.
Sure. I mean,
we have all kinds of social media needs, web design, marketing, you know, ideas. If you are connected to a church and you'd like to do Buy a Tree, Change a Life, get your pastor, go to buyatreechangealife.com, fill out an interest form. And I'll tell you, we have one church that jumped into Buy a Tree started with 120 people. Within a couple years, they're at 700 people.
Wow.
Because of the engagement. Obviously, there's some good leadership there.
Sure.
But how they engaged with their city. So it may be, you know, like Travis Hubde in North Dakota pulled in a Buy a Tree, Change a Life site there. So those are great opportunities to connect and serve, even if you're not able to go to a place like Cambodia. That's a long flight, by the way.
For sure.
Like 24 hours.
Wow.
24 hours.
Yeah. They let you get up and walk around, I guess, at some point.
You do. I didn't used to have to do this, but now you have to do that to keep your ankles from swelling.
There you go.
You don't have that issue, I don't think.
I don't know. I am 55 plus, and so it's kind of cool. I tell people I'm on the backside of 50, which means I'm closer to 100 than I'm not. I'm hoping to live to 100. I think it would be really cool for my wife and I to sit on the front porch somewhere and somebody come along and stick our hand up so we could wave. You know,
yes.
It'd be kind of cool. So, yeah. Travis, I have enjoyed your time on Surfcast, and I've been delighted to hear your story. I've watched you from a distance. Looking forward to experiencing Cambodia myself and, you know, whatever else might happen with, you know, this whole tree idea. But, you know, the cool thing is that what I'm hearing you say today that I think is really interesting for many of the people who might be listening to us is don't set back, you know, and expect somebody else to do what God's called you to do.
That's right.
You know, start where you are. I love your idea of never comparing yourself to somebody else, staying where you are and starting where you are. Last closing thoughts, anything you want to tell anybody in the world that might be hearing us today from the, you know, the Johnson household or all the work you're doing, last closing thoughts?
I would say don't stereotype yourself. Growing up, I remember people saying, Travis is soft-spoken, Travis is shy, and you let words hang over you like that, and then that's who you become, like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Don't stereotype yourself no matter what stage of life you're in, because you are not a page in a book, you're a book. You know, you're not a picture, you're more like a movie. Your life is unfolding, so it's never too late to attempt to do something a little bit beyond what you're able to do right now. And I find that you're invigorated, you really fulfill your purpose, you really get in touch with what God made you to be, so go for it.
Great. Hey, guys, as often you hear me say, or every time you hear me say at the end of every episode, you're made for more. Remember, God's depending on you to reach out and touch somebody in the world, so find your spot. It may be necessary for you to enter the phone booth and have a conversation, and then until you hear him speak, do what he's gifted you to do. That's what Travis is saying today, and I think it's a great word. To help you ponder that, to help you think through that, hang tight for this Lee Worship Tune and process what you've heard today as you continue to go out and make a difference in the world. Courtney, we're glad you joined us today. I hope you will join us at Lee University in a couple of years. Have a great time. See you guys.
I am confident in your promises. You have never failed me. And my soul will rest in your faithfulness always. I'll confess I'm yours always. What you have started, you will complete it. Your word is like an anchor for my soul. Started, you will complete it.